This week on the show, we're discussing the massive shakeup of Xbox leadership, PlayStation shuttering Bluepoint, James's review of Resident Evil Requiem, and Pokemon Fire Red Leaf Green coming to the Nintendo Switch 2. I'm your host, Ewan, and I'm joined today by my fellow gamers and co-hosts, James.
Hello.
Sorry. Shannon.
Howdy.
And Harry.
Hello.
This is the Press Start Podcast, our weekly video game discussion podcast. Let's get on with the show. Let's kick things off today by talking about the massive shakeup that Xbox announced for its leadership following CEO Phil Spencer resigning after 38 years at Microsoft. And I've got 2 years leading gaming, but I thought he was even longer than that. As part of the change, Xbox president Sarah Bond has also left the company, and the new CEO of Microsoft Gaming is Asha Sharma, who has been at Microsoft for 2 years and served as the head of Core AI. Matt Booty has also been promoted to executive VP and chief content officer of Xbox and will report directly to Asha. So some big shakeups at the top. Shannon, maybe first to you, and eager for you all to weigh into this as well, of course, but how do you think Phil Spencer and Sarah Bond's tenure leading Xbox will be remembered? A lot's happened in the time.
Yeah, I think the last little bit will be remembered less fondly than probably Phil Spencer deserves. I don't know as much about Sarah Bond, but I think when Phil Spencer took Xbox over, obviously, was post the Xbox One, which was probably Xbox's lowest point. And I think, yeah, it's been a challenging few years for the industry at large. But I think Phil, from what we know, has been mostly good for the Xbox brand. I think he's left it in a better position than when he found it. And that's all you can really ask of a head of a division.
Yeah, I think there's certainly been some ups and downs, but I think mostly up, especially considering where they were, like that Xbox One generation is a fair claim to make. James, obviously they kind of oversaw a lot of the kind of mergers and acquisitions and the kind of expansion of Xbox, like away from being just one hardware, one console, but kind of a broader sort of system of games. Like, how consequential do you think the likes of the Activision Blizzard sort of merger has been and some of their other acquisitions that they've made in that time as well?
I assume, like, a bit, right? Like, I feel like...
I feel like it's debatable. Like, yes, they were big moments, big news moments, but do you, feel like it's really kind of changed?
No, I was looking at it the other direction where, like, I feel like they spent so much money, then there was a lot of pressure from them internally to kind of make up. But that's what I meant, sorry. I, as a fan, like, obviously, like, as someone who plays games on Xbox, like, no. Like, I don't think it had nothing to do with me, really, in the big scheme of things. But I think spending that much money and then being, like, maybe somebody higher up was like, yeah, like, we'll make it back if we do this, this and this, and then it didn't work. And then they kind of did all these Hail Marys to kind of get people to get money back in the... What's the saying? Back in the can? I don't know. Back in the box. Kitty. Yeah, yeah.
In the kitty.
Yeah, cool. And that's when we kind of started teetering into, like, games coming out on PS5, and now, like, it's all it's all, you know, a fucking mess. So, I think so it had an impact.
Is this you saying their legacy is a bit of a fucking mess then? Is that where you've arrived?
I think, like, looking at it, trying to be, like, kind of balanced, like, I think Game Pass to start off with was a really cool idea, and then when it didn't grow the way that they wanted it to, they kind of made it less cool. And it's still pretty good. Like, I still subscribe. I still use it. I still have a use for it this year at least. I have no idea what the next 3 years look like. But, yeah, I do think when you look at, say, like, Nintendo and Sony, just in terms of, like raw first-party output, I don't want to say they're lagging behind, but I just don't think they had heavy hitters. Like, even big brands like Doom, like, I feel like that came and went. I mean, some people would argue it's not technically theirs or whatever, but, you know, that game, I feel like, could have been a really big thing, and it just kind of came and went really quickly last year. Mm-hmm. Whereas, like, say, Sony didn't have much, but, like, I think... What did they have last year? I can't even remember now. Like, did they have...
Yotei?
Yeah, like, Yotei, like, I feel like that culturally, like, I mean, it didn't, like, review as well, but Death I think, like, a lot more people were talking about that. Death Stranding is a really good one, too. Yeah. that alone, you know, and then Nintendo just like is unmatched in terms of the shit they're putting out. So I think like it's like cool, like we can buy up all these studios and stuff, but like what's the point if we're not just putting stuff out? So
yeah.
And to be fair, like I kind of admire that they have seemingly let studios kind of dictate the kind of games that they were making. Like, I don't know how
I think that's how much
they can sort of be held to responsible yeah. for the likes of Redfall, like not panning out the way that it did. And like, I kind of admire that to an extent, and I sort of admire that they've you know, championed you know, like the likes of Psychonauts kind of coming out, South of Midnight, letting Machine Games do something different with Indiana Jones. Like, there has been a kind of a suite of games that have kind of come out that I kind of am pleased that they're still sort of like continuing those partnerships and kind of giving them the sort of free rein to sort of pick and choose what their next project is. But yeah, that being said, like, it's hard to then ignore the fact that, like, Halo's kind of continued to be sort of squandered in that sort of time, some of these other IPs. So, yeah, I don't know how much they can really be, like, bear the responsibility of that, but it kind of might just be an unfortunate situation. We'd all be, like, kicking up a fuss, too, if they were dictating to studios what they were making as well. It seems to be more on like the platform business side where we could hold them to account and where their legacy lies.
Yeah. I think even if you put like sales aside and these like first party releases, not first party, but like Indie and Doom and, you know, South of Midnight sold well, like this ABK merger was so expensive. Like Xbox was no longer a small part of Microsoft's portfolio. And I think it was really difficult for them to try and prove that like, it was a worthwhile merger and that it would pay off. Because ever since then, it's just been downhill, like the Game Pass price hike. I know that people shouldn't be up in arms about it, but they are, that, you know, former exclusives are coming to PlayStation and other consoles. Like, yeah, I don't know. I think it's a bit of a combination of like their public image isn't very good. And I would wager a lot of it is internal pressure.
Yeah, and I think from like a kind of business sense, kind of getting that Activision Blizzard acquisition over the line, given how much they had to kind of fight that with regulators and stuff,
yeah,
was a pretty monumental achievement in a sense. I know people come down different sides of the fence on that, but the fact that they kind of went to battle with the regulators and made their case and kind of ultimately got the green light for the merger to go ahead, was from their perspective kind of a big win. And in fairness, I think for the most part, they've kind of stayed true to their word in sort of like not suddenly prohibiting those kind of games being available on other platforms. Like, they did seem to keep that part of their strategy whilst, I suppose, still having the kind of advantage of owning those studios. Call me out if I've got any of that wrong. But
I think you're right in that.
Up to the industry, and one that didn't look possible at times, and yet they managed to kind of make it happen.
Yeah, I think you're right in that, in like creative freedoms and things like that, but there has been other adverse effects in that, you know, studios have shuttered.
Yeah.
Because they've been needing to cut costs. Tango, Arcane Austin. You have to wonder if that would have happened if the merger hadn't gone through. Obviously, Redfall was going to launch the way that it launched, but like, you know, Hi-Fi Rush, by all accounts, was a success. So, like, I don't see, you know, what the reasoning is for their shuttering other than they needed to recoup costs somewhere because the merger was just absurd.
Yeah, and I guess to your point, James, they really kind of did heighten the need for these games to perform and Game Pass to grow at a quick rate of knots, kind of given just how much cash they were spending in some of these mergers and acquisitions. It's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. I sort of feel like the strategy that they've sort of committed to is one that takes years, if not decades, to sort of really sort of manifest. And I think the next kind of console generation, whatever that sort of looks like, is really going to be consequential for what Xbox becomes, whether or not they kind of continue to sort of be a hardware manufacturer, step back into more of a publishing role. Looking ahead, though, I want to talk more about the incoming or the new CEO. It is already in effect. In a tweet, Asha Sharma wrote, "Today I begin my role as CEO of Xbox. Here are my three commitments. One, great games. Two, return of Xbox. And three, future of play." Speaking specifically to her AI work in the past, which has no doubt caused a bunch of concern amongst gamers, she said, quote, AI has long been a part of gaming and will continue to be, but great stories are created by humans. As monetization and AI evolve and influence this future, we will not chase short-term efficiency or flood our ecosystem with soulless AI slop," she said. "Games are and always will be art crafted by humans and created with the most innovative technology provided by us." Shannon, does that put your mind at ease in any way?
No. No, I don't know. I'm not going to sit here and, like, judge her because, like, who knows, right? And, like, she's obviously been hired into the position for a reason. And she's, like, been really hype at Meta and a couple of other companies, and she's on the board for a lot of companies. So she's obviously a very accomplished woman. I think she's probably just needs to stop tweeting. Like, someone needs to change her Twitter password at this point, because I just think some of her replies...
I don't even think it's her.
Just, like, so very... well for other people in the tech industry.
I genuinely don't think it's her. I think it's a bot. Like, it's so weird the way... Like, which is, like, fine, but I also think we don't need... And this is the thing, like, I've seen thrown around, which is true. Like, we don't talk about the fact that the Nintendo people have a massive, like, social presence or parasocial relationships with, like, these weird people on Twitter, like Clobberill and stuff.
I mean, a lot of CEOs don't.
Yeah, 100%. Like, and I feel like that does come across. Why are you laughing? It's true. Like, I just think that does come across as, like, a little bit, even towards the end, I think, with Phil and stuff. It's like, bro, like, you can tweet to everybody about what you're playing right now, but, like, let's get the ball rolling on games, not, like, new controller colors.
More time looking after your teams.
So you say, like, playing Diablo after all those layoffs. Like, I don't know, like, that element of it all is, like, a bit... But I see a lot of people, looking at her gamer tag and investigating her and saying she only just started playing. I'm like, I don't fucking care. Like, if she is able to turn it around, I think it's going to be a very hard job. Like, I don't envy her. But I think if she is able to turn it around, like, that's incredible. And I think somebody who can do that is going to be somebody different. Like, somebody who isn't just this other, like... You know, like Phil and Sarah. Like, they were good. Like, I'm not saying that they were shit and stuff.
Think there needs to be a balance of, like, I don't think you need to be the biggest gamer in the world. I think you just need to understand the gaming industry and, like, you need to understand business. Like, there needs to be somewhere in the middle. Like, we understand the landscape and have a vision. But, like, you don't have to play 10 hours of
to a point. Games a day. Like, yes, I'm sure it helps for you to personally understand the industry. But at the same time, like, a CEO is... there's so much kind of caught up within that role, and, like, delegation becomes a huge part of it. Like, if she gets the right sort of people around her
and her management
team in the right points, like, if she's got the sense to sort of do that, then I think that's fine. And you look at her CV, and there are some pretty impressive sort of credentials in there. She's quite young, too, as well. I think, well, like, what she's been able to achieve in her career so far clearly speaks a lot to sort of her acumen and intelligence. And, yeah, I don't know. I'm not, like, as much of a naysayer about this as I feel like a lot of people are sort of being. I don't know. I think people are, like, really picking her words apart and, like, jumping on little things that they can call into question.
Sure.
But, I mean, like, just because she's worked for, like, their AI product team in the past, I don't think that inherently means that she's going to suddenly get all of the AI up in gaming. And her statement around that did truthfully put my mind sort of at ease. Like, even use of the term, like, soulless AI slop, like, for someone to have once
been in a very senior
AI position to say something like that.
To counter that, she was the head of AI, so I don't think it's the wildest jump to say that we can expect more AI to be in games either.
But yeah, maybe, but in the right way. Like, that's I don't think it's gonna be entirely removed from any one industry, but implemented in the right way is fine.
But, like, you just look at, like, people like Reggie for Nintendo. Like, before Nintendo, he was at, like, VH1 and Pizza Hut. And it's like, obviously, if somebody joined Nintendo and then they were like, oh, are they going to bring all of the pizza into Nintendo? Or like, obviously that's a really bad example, but you know what I'm
extra
saying?
Toppings.
Like, he didn't necessarily have history with games. Like, VH1 was music videos. Like, it just, like, it's,
yeah,
it does that. I don't think it's, yeah, I can see it. Yeah, I don't think so at all. And I think it's like ridiculous to think that. Personally. Yeah.
I think it's more so that AI is just already a hot button issue, like, in the industry, and like,
and
we
also
know that there are certain studios within Xbox that are using it to some extent. Like, we know Halo Studios is obviously, people don't know like how that looks and in what capacity it's being used, because there are examples where it's probably fine, and I guarantee you that almost every big AAA studio is using AI in some form or way to make their pipelines more efficient, but it's just about whether they're willing to disclose. But yeah. I don't know. I can understand why people are trepidant.
And everyone likes pizza. So
they should, yeah, true. But you should reserve judgment, you know, before before we write off everything that they're going to do in the future.
Yeah, it's also, absolutely.
Yeah, it's also very fashionable to like tweet about how much you hate AI and how much you hate Xbox. So this is like a double whammy for a lot of those people who tweet.
Yeah.
In their blue sky echo chambers for likes. So I understand. Like, obviously, I don't personally, like, think, yeah, I understand the trepidation, but, like, yeah.
I'm willing to sort of reserve judgment until it kind of, manifests
100%.
A bit more. And I think, like, even kind of coming out and saying, one, the top priority being great games, like, I think that's kind of, everyone would say, like, the sore point. Like, so long as kind of, games that are coming out that we kind of like are desperate to sort of play, like, you're willing to jump through any number of hoops.
But her saying that as well,
I'm
like,
consequential to the survival of like the Xbox ecosystem, whatever form it takes.
Yeah, I just think when she said that, I'm like, yeah, righto. Like, let's just see it happen. Like, everyone says
that.
Yeah,
it's also the obvious thing to say.
It's also the most obvious. And then, like, but then I also saw that tweet. She replied to that tweet where, like, hear you when people have said there should be exclusives. And I'm like, so what, are you going to make them all exclusive again? Like, that feels a bit weird. If you're going to roll all that back. I don't know if that's the way. I don't know.
Yeah, I also saw...
But I don't know why. I feel like Xbox is, like, they're heading in a better position now than they have been in the last, like, 8 years. So, like, I don't think she needs to do anything that drastically different.
I don't know if it's like a straight line in a better direction. Like, and we've spoken about the layoffs, but I think the price increases around Game Pass as well, obviously met with pretty mixed reaction. And I don't think
I mean, I think Xbox is going to have to be profitable. So I don't think she's going to like make Game Pass free or anything. It's going to like that. None of that's going to change. And like the multi-platformness of it.
Their most recent
is gonna help them make money.
Yeah, I mean, profitability seems to be the one thing that they've sort of not been struggling with. I think at their last kind of earnings, they were sort of up. But yeah, the strategy has not always been clear to me. I think there.
It feels like it changes every quarter.
I don't think they know what their strategy is.
No, I think it's been a lot of wait and see. It's been very reactive.
Yeah, they have a rough idea, but there's a lot of
kind of upcoming release slate of games like that needs some strengthening, I would argue, and maybe that is well in the works, but we don't really have a lot of visibility of what that sort of looks like at the moment. So yeah, I think it's a tumultuous sort of time to come into the company, but I'm optimistic that who knows whether or not she's the right person for the job, but let's wait and see how it pans out. From one turbulent major manufacturer to another, though, let's talk about PlayStation, who rocked the gaming world, announcing that Bluepoint, the studio behind the Demon's Souls and Shadow of the Colossus remakes, would be closed. In a statement, Herman Hulse, CEO of Sony Interactive Entertainment, said rising development costs, slowed industry growth, changing player behavior, and broader economic headwinds are making it harder to build games sustainably. While I know this is hard news to hear, I'm confident in the direction we're headed. Creativity, innovation, and building unforgettable experiences for players remains at the heart of PlayStation Studios. Harry, maybe first to you on this one. Given PlayStation only acquired Bluepoint, I think it was 2022, 2021, something like that.
Yeah, it was fairly recent.
Who or what is to blame for the closure of a studio seemingly as talented as Bluepoint?
Yeah, I don't know. I think maybe if Sony had had them working on a new game or a remake of something that would have done particularly well instead of some like amorphous live service God of War game, then we'd be in a different position. Like, I don't know. I think it's a fundamental mismanagement of their strengths from Sony, and obviously was part of, or PlayStation rather, and is part of, you know, that basket where they were going all in on live service for a bit, and, you know, they were going to do factions and whatever for Last of Us, and, you know, that fell through. And yeah, I mean, it's hard not to think about, like, what they could have been working on in that time. Like, both Shadow of the Colossus and Demon's Souls reviewed, and I think they both sold very well. They're both really, really excellent remakes. Yeah, it's unfortunate because they were, like, a really talented studio. I think that they have strengths, like, in remaking games, at least with those titles, that, like, I don't think we really saw very often. Outside of, like, maybe what Capcom do with the RE remakes and things like that. So, yeah, I don't know. The blame is probably squarely with PlayStation because of what they had them working on. I don't know why it had to be Bluepoint that shut it as opposed to another studio, but...
Who would you want to shut instead?
Yeah. I don't know.
It sounded like there was a pecking order there,
didn't it? No idea, but...
Nick, yeah.
Yeah, James, do you think this is, or Shannon, do you think this is as much like a...
I was just going to say, I think this leads... Strategy? Yeah, exactly. I think this leads perfectly into the last combo. And I think Jim Ryan was purely like looking at business stuff and like money that other games are making. And like, we already know that PlayStation was set to do like, what, 10 or something live service games. Mm. And I think one has released, maybe a second one's coming in marathon. And I think that, yeah, ultimately undid Bluepoint. Like, I'm sure they were spending 3 or 4 years on this God of War live service game, and they realized that it wasn't a good idea, and they thought, well, we can't have this studio working on something else for 4 years when they haven't released anything, which is not their fault at all. And I think it's crazy that we couldn't get like a Resistance remastered trilogy or Infamous or literally any kind of remaster or remake. That's to say that Bluepoint can't... Yeah, Bloodborne. Not to say that Bluepoint can't do anything new.
To be fair, they haven't. Like, I think that's like...
No.
But I think that this sucks because to me, like, I think a natural progression for them would be maybe, say, like, Demon's Souls, then Bloodborne. That makes a lot of sense. And you can kind of... I always thought when they bought them that the idea was that they would maybe... Because Sony has so many, like, old franchises, like... That you can...
Remake stuff, you know?
Bring back, like, Medieval was a really good example. I don't think it sold that well. But, like, stuff like that... I mean, I'm going to say Siphon Filter and, obviously, Ape Escape. Like, there's just so many, like, older brands that I feel like they could have brought back as, like, these, like, mid-budget titles and stuff, and done really good work.
I mean, I don't hate that they were given the chance to work on something new, and we don't know that it was awful.
It's not even like I agree in one aspect, but when you say something new, I don't think like a God of War live service game for a team that's never made.
Yeah, but we don't know if they wanted to do that. Like, we don't know if that was like I'm sure they wanted to do it.
Like, who wanted to do it or not? I would just think it's a shit choice for that developer. No, I don't. I think they're really good. I'm actually this is the worst news to come out of like the last 2 weeks.
It is awful.
Yeah, I just think it's so shit. Like, but then I also think like, how the fuck did they make a game in 2020, and then like nothing for 6 years and now closed? Like, I just I just can't fathom that. Like, it just doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, not even like smaller projects. Like, it doesn't even have to be full remakes. Do remaster trilogies or something. I don't know.
Like Gravity Rush, like, as a good example. Yeah. I know that they're not games. I mean, they've already done that.
I've heard it said before as well. Like, there might have been a good studio to kind of pick up the Uncharted property and, like, make another, like, new Uncharted game.
Or the God of War remake trilogy. I saw someone ask in the studio head if they were doing that, and he was like, no, unfortunately not.
It does seem crazy that, we've got Sony Santa Monica doing that when Bluepoint, seemingly the right team for the job, but now sort of being closed up.
Yeah, like, why not give it to them and then let Santa Monica work on whatever the next mainline entry is or something else that's new? Like, that makes no sense to me.
I'm sure there's, like, a reason. But I also think, like, with Bluepoint, they from a tech perspective, like, I followed them a lot back when Silent Hill got remastered on 360 and PS3 because that game was, like, a disaster and Bluepoint was kind of the gold standard then. They just had, like, a really good, like, I guess, pipeline for taking a finished game, reverse engineering it, and then, like, kind of making it work on modern hardware. And I think it would have been really cool to see them do that for, like, a lot of games that are trapped on the PS3 or PS2.
Resistance.
Yeah, if that's what you want.
Yeah, it's a shame. And it does make me kind of question as well, like, how these decisions are sort of made. Like, I guess digging into Herman Hull's statement, like, he calls out stuff like rising development costs, slow industry growth, changing player behavior. Like, we haven't, to my knowledge, heard anything more about Haven Studios and, like, what they're doing with Fair Games. Like, that seems like a really weird elephant in the room.
My gut says if they weren't releasing that and that was being closed, they would have announced it with this, I think.
Nah, yeah. They're gonna like wait until like something else. One happens. A week.
Do they just want to bury that news somewhere?
Yeah,
I feel like ripping off the Band-Aid would be not a bad way to go. I'm also curious, like, as much as I would hate or will this into existence, so I'm kind of touching wood here, but like Sony Bend as well, like so quiet for such a long period of time. Like, just all of these question marks like start to spring up, and as Sony, I guess, are kind of reevaluating their structure and the projects that people are working on, presumably looking at where they kind of rein in some of their spending as well. Like, it does concern me about what other studios might sort of be in the firing line, what other projects are sort of being reevaluated, that kind of thing. But I don't know, to your earlier point, Harry, maybe it is a bit of a course correction. Like, clearly the live service strategy that they kind of lent hard into looked good on paper, but actually kind of bring it to a fruition, they kind of neglected some of the challenges that come with like cutting through and establishing a player base and then kind of turning it into a money-making machine. Like, the opportunity to do that is few and far between. And yeah, their track record of doing that's not looking great. Let's see how Marathon plays out. So yeah, maybe it is a bit of a course correction, kind of pivoting back towards the single player sort of narrative driven experiences that their studios tend sort of be good for. I think the God of War remake is a sensible sort of thing to do, but yeah, there's a bit of a hangover sort of being felt here. And it's a shame, I guess it's a shame kind of Blue Point weren't afforded their sort of house mark opportunity to kind of get that sort of big budget, really kind of get ambitious with something and see it through.
Or even just like James was saying, and like having the opportunity to free games of the constraints of the platforms that they're stuck on, you know, like bring these experiences to people who haven't played them before, make them like accessible on modern platforms. Like, there's so many titles that are stuck on like the PS3, the PS2, whatever, that, you know, it's hard to play them if you don't want to emulate for whatever reason. Like,
yeah,
it just feels like a missed opportunity. And like, even in the context of, you know, reprioritizing towards single player games again, like, they have a whole catalog that they can remake and remaster. But I suppose they want, you know, new entries in established IP or whatever. And
Hopefully, Blue Point do kind of get, or the staff there do kind of get taken in by some of the other PlayStation studios. I think there was a mention in the statement that they would make an effort to do that, but clearly a talented group of people. And yeah, James, to your point about like them having that pipeline that reverse engineers these games as well, it'd be a shame to see that sort of expertise lost from the industry. All right, we're going to take a quick break then, but we'll be back in a second to talk about, James, your review of Resident Evil Requiem. Resident Evil Requiem is a game we've all been eagerly anticipating, but James, you were the lucky one of us that got to play it ahead of time, beating the game and submitting your review to the site. I say lucky, but your face is giving me worrying signs. What did you score Resident Evil Requiem and why?
Nah, it's fine. I scored it an 8.5, which is...
Okay, that's a relief.
A smidge lower than my other Resident Evils. Yeah. Oh god, where do you start? It's like, really, it was like, it's kind of one of those reviews where you write, like Harry said it to me, is like you write it and you don't really know what to put on it, like number wise like that's the hardest part of this stupid job, is like assigning a number to your words, because you know people are only going to read the number but not the words, but the words explain the number.
There's a lot of nuance to get you there.
I think that if I were to just put everything aside, it's a good game. It's a very good game. It's a very solid Resident Evil game. I think the context under which it's releasing is going to do it a lot of... I'm so intrigued to see what people think of this, because this episode will come out when everyone else has talked about it, and I might be wrong. But I do feel like this might be quite a contentious game in the series. Like, I essentially, the whole everything we've seen in the trailer so far, like the really solid horror gameplay and the smidges of Leon and stuff, the game kind of like flips that ratio in the second half, and it becomes very much a Resi 4 sequel in the second half and almost forgets about Grace. So the problem there is, it's not a problem per se. Like, the Leon stuff is still good. Like, I really enjoyed it. But I think that the beginning of this, the first half of this game where you're playing as Grace for the most part, is like really good. Really good horror. Really good kind of, you know, like that Resident Evil style where you're like in this big area and you're like going from wing to wing of a house and like getting different keys and doing puzzles and working out where to go and stuff and unlocking shortcuts and all that shit. Like, that stuff is incredible. Like, some of the best in the series so far. And I was loving that. Mm. And then, like, it's like, okay, cool, now it's an action game. And, like, I was... and that's, again, fine. Like, I think the combat is really good. It's, like, the best it's ever been. I don't want to go too far, but it does feel... It flows and feels better than RE4 Remake and RE4. Yeah. But I just kept... I was hankering for, like, that Grace stuff because that was so strong. Like, really, really strong. Which I think Resident Evil... in the recent years has had like a bit of an issue with. Like, I feel like when you look at RE7, you've got the first two houses, which are really, really strong, and then it becomes a bit more actiony. And then Village was like that too, with the castle and then the house. Very good horror. And then it becomes more actiony. It doesn't ever get as stupid as like Village. Like, I liked Village, but I can admit that the metal tornado thing and the tank that Chris gives you is like a bit...
I almost forgot about that.
Yeah, but like, it doesn't get to that point ever at any point.
Okay.
But, yeah, I think in a few years, I'll probably be more up on it. But right now, I'm just, like, a little bit, like, I don't know. Like, I just think you've really honed your craft here, like, with the Grace stuff. Like, in terms of classic Resident Evil. And I know people loved RE4. Like, it's such an influential game. And so, it's, like, influenced so many modern games today. But, I don't know. Like, I don't need another RE4 so soon. I say so soon. It's been 3 years. But you know what I mean? Like,
it kind of... And correct me if I'm summarizing you wrong here, but it kind of sounds as if, like, it's a game of two halves. Maybe that ratio is not quite right. But is it a kind of a conflicting sort of tonal shift? Or does it feel like it's two halves of a game made by different teams? Or... the reason I pull you up on it, because it is... Like, I feel like there is always that kind of flip of a switch in a Resident Evil game where it does kind of, like... escalate into more of like an action and sort of intensive game.
I think,
and maybe the point at which that happens in the story varies game to game, but it inevitably does happen at some point. Like, I'm wondering what feels off about it in this case.
I think it's like, and this is I don't know if this is bad of me to like factor this in, but it's how they talked about the game and how they've marketed the game up until this point.
Your expectations,
it's like your expectations are set, right?
Perception,
like, I literally spoke to them. Like, one of them, the producers, and he's like, yeah, it's horror from beginning to end. And I was like, cool, but, like, it's not. You lied.
Different
like,
types of horror.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Like, I don't know.
It's horror for the zombies when you're playing as Leon.
Yeah. Yeah, like, yeah, because he's a very flexible in this game. But he can do everything. But, yeah, like, I think it's that. Like, I just think I don't know. It's not bad. Like, I really want to make that clear. Like, I wouldn't have given it an 8.5. I thought it was, like, bad or disastrous. But I think, like, it's just because, especially this is from the Resi 7 director, like, and they talked a lot about the importance of horror to the whole experience, and all of the marketing was mainly horror stuff. Like, I kind of felt that way. I will say at the beginning, like, the first few hours, you kind of spend 30 minutes to an hour as each character. It swaps between them quite rapidly. And that was a bit jarring at first. And then once you get to the first major section as Grace, where you will probably spend 3 to 7 hours or something, depending on how you play, that's really tense and really scary and stuff. And then you kind of run through that area as Leon after that for, like, I would say 30 minutes to an hour, like, kind of mopping up all the enemies you were previously scared of. Like, that's a really cool... Yeah. Push-pull kind of... It's very cathartic to kind of go
tension
through...
Tension release,
and, like, lay waste to all these things that have been causing you so much grief as Grace. Like, I think that's a really clever way to do it. Mm-hmm. But then, like I said, it just flips it again, and it's like, okay, now you're Leon for, like, 7 hours or whatever. And I didn't like that as much. Still good, But I just think, like, I just couldn't help but feel like they were just so onto it with the Grace stuff. Like, I feel like if we had a whole game of this, that would be, like, one of the best new Resident Evils. And that's obviously a personal thing. Like, I think a lot of people will like the mix.
Yeah.
But I just think it was really positioned to be, like, Grace's game. And, like, I actually don't even feel like story-wise... I mean, she is kind of important, but I obviously don't want to talk too much about the story. But, like, I do feel like this does get a bit more Leon-focused in the second half. Much so.
Is the... You mentioned, like, that the Grey section is, like, 3 to 7 hours, and how the start of the game has, like, the level design that sort of loops back on itself with shortcuts and things like that, a la the Spencer Mansion and the RPD. Mm-hmm. Is that, like, just... that Grace section, or is it there more of that later in the game, or is it sort of just like once you leave the Rhodes Hill Center or whatever?
There is more. It's kind of like Resi 2, right, where you have the RPD, right, and then you go into the sewer, and that is still an area that you kind of explore and go back and forth in, but it's not as big as the RPD. So there's still all of Grace's bits are still like that, that have that openness to them in a way. But I will say this is probably the first time I think Resi has had a big stealth focus. Like, it definitely is a lot easier to just kind of sneak past shit than kill it.
I don't mind that.
Yeah, and but then there is also like a kind of really clever like risk reward system where like if you do kill something, it can come back later and will probably be even worse for you, but it will give you that relief straight away, right? Like, yeah. You kind of have to really pick your battles a lot. And she has like two guns, and I really like that. Like, I feel like you've got a pistol and then the Requiem Magnum, which is like, I think it really hones the combat in a way that hasn't really done before in Resident Evil. Like, you don't have that natural progression for Grace where it's like pistol, shotgun, grenade launcher, Magnum. Do you know what I mean? Like, I feel like every game does that, but this feels quite unique in that way. Yeah, but then Leon gets fucking everything, like pistol, shotgun, machine gun, sniper rifle.
Full Resi 4.
Yeah.
He gets grenades. And you can also, like, craft. Yes.
I don't know how to ask this. Like, do you think the game would be better if they just didn't do Leon? Because that was obviously for, like, 98% of the marketing of this game. They wouldn't say Leon. Like, should they have just not done Leon?
Like, at all?
Well, yeah. Like, if the horror bits are sound. Or is it just the balance is off?
I don't know. I think with this game, I've always felt this game has kind of tried to appeal to people who hated 7 because it was Ethan, right? It's like 7 was very much, it's just Ethan, it's a new story, new characters, kind of like a soft reboot, right? Yeah. And a lot of people hated the first person aspect of it. So in this game, they're like, hey, like you can play it first or third person, and you can also play it as Grace and Leon. Like, it feels like it's trying to cater to like too many people in a way.
Yeah.
And it's really scared to alienate anyone. And in the process, like, to answer your question, Lashana, I don't want to say the game would be better if Leon wasn't in it. I just want to say, like, I wish that it was a full game of stuff like Grace's stuff. Like, I wish it was a full horror experience. Like, most...
So maybe Leon could have had his gun stripped away or something. I don't know. Like, maybe they needed to be more clever.
They do try to make Leon's bits, like, scarier. But, like, it's also so hard to be scared when you have 8 guns. Like that you're carrying around,
and you've like a hatchet, and you're parrying shit,
and you have a grenades, and then you can stick 2 grenades together to make a big grenade,
and you're fly kicking people. I'm assuming,
yeah, not just people, lots of different, the whole zoo, really, but do you know what I mean? Like, you just can't make that, and I kind of see that they know that because they said they tried to make a horror game with Leon at the beginning, and it didn't work, and it's like, so we know what this is. I think both of these stars of Resi have a place. I just don't think they need to be in one game.
They need to be pushed together.
I wonder how much of it this was an attempt to like kind of merge the two sides of the Resident Evil fan base. Because like I feel like
that's what I feel like.
Yeah. I feel like they even tried to do that with Village as well. Like you know, like with the castle and stuff at the start, that was very traditional, like old school Resident Evil design, like it was in 7. But yeah, like James says, when you get to the back half of that game after like House Beneviento, it kind of is an RE4 like spiritual successor in a way.
Yeah.
And it seems that they're doing it again here, but more literally in the sense that you play as Leon.
Which is like, which is fine. The sales of RE7 were astronomical, right? Like, relative to the rest of the series. And it just keeps doing...
I mean, it keeps... Oh, no. I think RE5 is still the top selling. Like,
okay. Yeah.
Which is, like, probably not a good idea.
Because I just wonder, like... I don't know how much evidence there is to, like, substantiate any of this. But I wondered, like, how much of it was, like... Okay, we brought in this new generation of RE fans with 7 that were, like, maybe aren't picking up the remakes in the same sort of way. Like, can we kind of take steps to kind of meld that fan base into one that kind of buys every release thereafter? I don't know. Personally, that's not been my experience. I've gone back and played 2 Remake, 3 Remake, 4 Remake, and loved it. But I don't know, maybe there are RE players out there that liked 7 and maybe haven't gelled with the others in the same way.
I'm sure that's what's happening.
I thought Village did it okay. I know by the end it felt a bit ridiculous how many things you were killing, but I thought it had a good mix of like ramping up towards the end. I guess the hard thing for them is like you can't really just keep doing that formula, right, where it starts off like slow and tense and then just ramps up to more actiony. So I don't know, I'm more keen to play this based on what you've said, James. I think I think they're trying to do different things. I think it's just risky when they're like mainline games though.
Yes, because like I mean, and the thing with Village as well, I really liked Village, how you kind of the Village was that center, right? And
yeah, then kind the of hub was
out,
cool.
Go out and come back and stuff. That's not there here. Like, you definitely, like, move through the story. Mm. And I can't... Yeah, I don't... I don't know. I want to be really clear. I still think this is a really good game, and I think, like, all of you will play it and really enjoy it. Like, you have, like, 7 and 8 and 4 Remake and stuff.
Yeah.
I just... Especially, like, now that maybe I've said what I've said, like, in terms of, like, maybe temper your expectations, it's 2 games in 1, in a way. I just think, like, coming off Village, and it was quite clear what that game was going to be before it came out.
Yeah, they talked about how it was, like, very inspired 4 by
different
RE4
types of horror.
The merchant
and, like,
and stuff.
But whereas, like, this game introduces your merchant, and even then it's not a merchant character, like, 10 to 12 hours in. It's just so weird that, like, you're introducing a currency system and a merchant that far into the game. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's really odd. It's almost like they did make...
It does sound like a rug pull.
They have 2 games in development at some point. They're like, shit, like, they're both running over. Let's just mash them together, in a way.
Yeah.
I will say plot-wise, I don't feel... I feel like that... I'm surprised at how restrained they are in terms of, like, it goes back to Raccoon City, right? But, I mean, we can't talk about... I don't want to talk about too much of that, but they don't really nostalgia bait you enough. And I'm, like, pretty... Okay. I'm pretty sensitive to that. I really, like, hate when I'm being nostalgia baited. Yeah. But I feel like Resident Evil has never kind of returned to a location before. So when it's on the box, right, like the ruined RPD, like, I feel like that's such a big part of it. And it is a big part of the game. But I think the way that it handles a lot of the characters and the story in that regard is a little bit of a letdown.
Mm.
You wanted a little bit more fan service, did you?
Yeah, I did. And I know that sounds really... I know that sounds bad. I know that sounds really bad, like, because it's, like, so cheap. But, like, I just think it needed to be... I would love it to have been a little bit tackier with some of its fan
service. I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing. Like, I do think that this game has been marketed as sort of like a...
Like, almost like almost the end, like a, right? Of
a,
like,
or, like, a soft conclusion to everything that they've done. Not just, like, 7 and 8, but also the older games and, like, bringing back Leon and things like going back to, like, Raccoon City and the RPD. So you kind of would expect there is an element of, like, oh, that thing's here or this person's here. And, like, I don't know. I certainly was going into it with the idea that was going to be the case. And maybe I'll have a different experience now that my expectations have sort of been taken down a little bit. But yeah, like, I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing for you to have thought that you were going to get that, because I think a lot of people did and do.
I know you can't go into the story, or you didn't, yeah, we don't want to go into the story too much, James, for the sake of spoilers. But I don't know how to phrase this. Like, did you come away from this story, like, looking forward to having a spoiler cast? Like, do you, is there a kind of story and lore that you want to dig into and, like, talk with people that have finished the story?
Absolutely.
And it could have just been a black screen for 10 hours and James would want a spoiler cast about it.
Okay, that's not true. I feel like you've been waiting to say that the whole episode.
Yeah, I did.
Nah, I like, obviously, and I am excited to hear about what everyone thinks. Just people like, say, like Ewan and Shannon, who like play it, but like, you know, whatever. They don't really care about like the lore that much.
But then, the plebs of the world.
Yeah, but then like I've got like another friend who purely plays this game for like the mechanics. And I'm excited to talk to him about it and see what he thinks of certain parts. And then I've got people like Harry and like my other friends who are like have been playing it since the beginning and will understand kind of my frustrations with the story, I think. Mm. Like, I'm so excited to see what people think of this game. Like, I think it is. There's nothing else really like it, like, at the end of the day. I mean, besides RE4 and RE7. But, like, I think, like, it's
in the way that it amalgamates it, though, I guess it's...
And I think it's very, like, ballsy what they've done. And I don't know if it's going to... I want to know if it pays off for them, is what I'm trying to say, I guess. Like, they really have hidden half of this game from people, and I don't know if that's from a perspective of it's so mysterious or purely to mitigate people's concerns. It's going to turn into RE6. Like, it could have been, I don't know what their intentions were either way. Maybe it was both. But I think...
Did you follow the third and first person recommendations?
Absolutely. What the... I don't know. Yeah, Grace third person is disgusting. I don't know. Like, yeah.
So first person... I guess...
Did you try it? Like, did you...
Yeah, of course, I tried both. First person for Leon is kind of cool. There's some elements, like, because when you kick someone, it, like, zooms out to show you him kicking and zooms back in, which is kind of so the way good. That's kind of the way it works for, the VR versions. So it's kind of similar to that. There are some bits of Leon's I think would actually probably be better first person. And this is another maybe, I didn't even really talk about this in the review, but now that I'm talking about it out loud, this is maybe the problem with, like, creating a game that works.
I'm just
works.
A good editor.
Yeah. Well, I don't think you've even read the review yet, but that's okay. Anyway. Yeah, but, like, what I'm trying to say is I think that's the problem with, like, third and first person, right? You can't really create these bespoke scares. Like,
yeah,
there's definitely recommendations. I think Grace definitely works better as first, like, 100%. There's just less tension. If you're running from something and you can't look behind you, like, that's fucking scary. Even though you know what's chasing you, like, that's still really scary. But I think with Leon, you kind of, with so much going on and so much happening, like, you kind of need to...
You kind of need to be third person, yeah.
Yeah. And I do wonder if maybe third person for Grace is purely there for the people who couldn't play Seven. I know so many people who started Seven and couldn't play it because it was just too scary.
Yeah.
Like I don't know if that's there for them. But
I reckon it is. I think because they, like, the same thing happened with Village. Like, I think, you know, Seven came out and there was backlash over it. Well, not backlash, but, you know, there was a vocal group of people who really wanted third person, and then they stuck to their guns with Village and then ended up doing a free update. Anyway,
yeah, it was a paid update.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, even like worse.
I thought they could make some money off it.
Yeah, because they had a season pass. I need to like bolster it.
Yeah,
but then on the same flip side, there's a boss battle in this that I think some people will not be able to play. Like, they will have to stop playing. Like, it is so
the
fucking gross.
Scariness or the
like everyone has different like fears and scares and stuff, right? But there's something in this that made my skin crawl a little bit. But I'm not normally affected by stuff like that.
Just thinking about it.
Yeah. Well, it depends on what you're scared of, really. And that's the thing with horror. It's always going to be hard, right?
Subjective, yeah. My imagination's running wild.
it's simple but effective, I'll put it that way. But like, I think overall, very good. I think it's a really, like, even if you look at these two halves, like, independently, both very solid halves. I just don't know if bringing them together, it's tonally makes sense. Okay. It does for a bit, and then it kind of just is like, nah, let's just do Leon for ages.
Maybe to close us out, I'm putting you on the spot here, but do you think you could rank the Resident Evil games? Where would you place 9?
In terms of, like kind of
mainline entries.
I think it's and wait, including remakes? Like, I'll just the. Can I just do the modern Resident Evils?
Can we? Yeah, okay. Do the modern ones.
Do seven onwards with like RE2 remake, 3 remake.
I was going to say, could you bundle those together or?
No, that's going to make it sound worse than it is. Because okay. I don't. It's. Because I love 2 and 4. I love 7 as well. Like, yeah. I would say 2, then 4, then 7. And then I would put. I'm going to put Village and 9 together on the same thing. Okay. And then 3. 3's at the bottom.
3's not one of my favorites.
How, man? It's good.
I think it was the punchiness of it. Like, it felt.
We're getting on a bit of a tangent. But, like. 3 remake is probably really good if you haven't played the original.
Yes. Yeah,
yeah, without being like, that was my experience. Like, I've only played the remake.
A gatekeepy asshole. It is a bit of a
you don't know what they cut and what's missing and things like that.
But I think like they learnt a lot from 3, and it's kind of an important step into how we got such a good 4, I think, is probably a nice way to put it. Okay. I will say one more thing, like the Leon stuff, there is some cool new stuff in here, like I kind of implied it was just RE4, but they do some really cool shit that they've never done in the series before. It's one of the most, like, biggest maps you've ever had to explore in a Resident Evil game before, like the city. Mm. They do some really cool shit because you do climb a lot of towers that are, like, broken and, like, falling over and stuff. Like, it's not done in, like a tacky, cinematic, Uncharted way. Like, it is still gameplay. But yeah, like, I think overall his gameplay is still quite cool. There are just some bits, like I showed Shannon a clip that I'm not going to talk about here, and Shannon was like, this doesn't even look like Resident Evil, and I was like, yeah. Yeah, I fucking know, like, that was. But yeah, I think overall it's really, really good. There's just a few bits that I think could have been better. I think there has to be DLC coming too, because I feel like there's a lot of unresolved threads.
There almost always is, right?
Yes.
I'm sure that's going to be the case. All right, one more topic, though, to close us out for today. Hopefully it's a quick one, seeing as we're already going real long in this episode. But Nintendo and the Pokemon Company have announced that Pokemon Fire Red and Pokemon Leaf Green are coming to the Nintendo Switch. They will release on Feb 27th for $30 each, and they're up for pre-order on the eShop now. Chances are, by the time you're listening to this episode, though, they will be available. Both games are their original versions and seemingly haven't been updated from the original release on the Game Boy Advance. Shannon, given this has caused a bit of controversy, what would you have liked to have seen Nintendo do?
I mean, will the Game Boy Advance, collection exists on the Nintendo Switch Online, which people pay for. So I just think that, like, if you're going to have that, I feel like you can't double dip, right? And, like, this has been a problem with Nintendo, like, remastering these collections and, like, dropping Wii games or, like, GameCube games in these collections, but not on the service. So, yeah, I think they needed to do that, or they needed to do something new, like remaster the graphics in some way, add some kind of new functionality, like online gameplay or something. Like, I just needed to... If you're going to charge $30, then I think you have to add something. But in saying that, why would you do anything else than what they've done when it's going to sell, like, millions of units at $30 for no work? So
yeah, they do it GGs. It works. It's frustrating.
I've seen, how many people have you seen saying, like, oh, $30, I'm still gonna buy. It's like they're gonna buy it. Everyone's gonna buy it.
I'm gonna buy it anyway. It's like, well, yeah vote.
I think this
wallet,
is a
people.
Pokemon problem. This is a very common Pokemon Correct. problem. They can literally shit anything out and people will buy
but
it.
But worse with nostalgia as well, like, you add the two together.
I don't know if they... I don't know. It's like, it's hard because I feel like I've always said they should just let us buy these games and just keep them. But then on the other side of it, the NSO stuff, like being able to play all of these games online when they weren't ever online because the emulator... Do you know what I mean? Like, you can play Donkey Kong... Like, I played DKC2 with a friend online and it worked perfectly, like, as if we were in the same room. Like, I think stuff like that is really cool, and it kind of sucks that they didn't put these on that service, which would then give it kind of those little extra modern features. Because as it stands, right, this is just a straight ROM dump. There's nothing extra, right?
No.
Doesn't appear
nothing
that
at all
that way.
Yeah, like, I think that's And is it 30 Australian?
Yeah, I think that was the Australian price. Yeah.
I mean, you could argue, like, how much does it cost to buy a cartridge and hardware?
today. I mean, I think ultimately it comes down to the fact that they shot themselves in the foot by not putting it on the service, and then again by making it $30. Like, I don't think it would be as much of an issue if it was like $15.
Yeah.
Like, it should be on the service anyway, but like $30 with no updates or anything, no online functionality, like, it just adds insult to injury, I think.
Yeah, 100%.
But Shannon's right in that, like, it will sell gangbusters anyway. People will buy it. There are people who are complaining that will buy it. I'm complaining. I'll probably buy it. Like,
I won't.
My dogs are probably barking and you're going to hear that. But I was saying to James, like, it's kind of weird how this has been announced and is dropping when the presents happens. Like, maybe there is some kind of surprise where, like, there's a remastered version.
Well, they kind of published it on the shop, right? Like, didn't the listing go up before they announced it? So I think it was just... I don't know if it was like accidental. A comedy of errors or...
But just some, like, I still think, like, it wasn't a stealth drop. Like, it's releasing, like, straight after the presents. So, look, I don't think they're going to do this. But, like, it would be cool if it's just the ROM, but maybe there is, like, a remastered graphic style or something. I don't know, that you can toggle. Like, that would be a cool way to honor, like, the original Pokemon games, essentially. But it's not going
to
happen.
Yeah, it'd be a very strange way to go about the announcement if that's the case. But hey,
I feel like it would have been on the eShop listing if they were going to do it.
Yeah. While we're on the topic, can we just quickly ask, why do they not care about Gold and Silver? What is the go with the
because that's my favorite.
I'm the wrong person to ask. I got no horse in the race.
And nothing. There was the D. I was looking today and there were DS remasters, right? So there are...
Yeah, they did HeartGold and SoulSilver. And they're like... The thing is with HeartGold and SoulSilver is like they're widely considered like the best remakes. Like the best Pokemon remakes. I don't know if it's like that they feel like there isn't much nostalgia for Gen 2 or like...
It's the best or what. Gen.
Like... Fucking, yeah, but yeah, I mean, anyway. Yeah, like people were clamoring for Gen 3 remakes and stuff, like with Oras on the 3DS, and then, you know, Gen 4 as well for the Switch. I guess you don't hear it as much with Gen 2 because
because they're not bringing it back.
I was saying to James and I were talking, like, the rumor was Let's Go Johto, and I feel like that was a perfect thing for them to do after the first one. Like, it's such a great idea that, like, simplifies it. Like, I loved Let's Go Pikachu and Let's Go Eevee. Like, it just was so much simpler and just about the Pokemon and still had, like, the elements of the original game and the nostalgia without the battling mechanics, which I'm not the biggest fan of in the way that they exist, to be honest. So I really like that, and I'd love that for Johto. But I don't know, apparently that's scrapped, isn't it? But
yeah, it was. But I agree with you. I think it would have been cool. It's a good way to do, like, games that have already been remade.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a weird one. Maybe we'll get some kind of announcement, or Harry, you think no?
I don't know. I think if we, like, Gen 10 will obviously be announced.
Yeah, Gen 10.
And I don't know if they would announce, like, obviously it's Gen 5 remakes next after that. So, like, I don't know if they're planning on announcing that at the same time or...
What's Gen 5? I don't even...
Black and White.
I don't, for anything after, like, Gold and Silver, I just don't care.
And I can't imagine that they're going to announce. I can't imagine they're going to announce the next Legends game, but there is another one of those coming, according to that Terra leak. So,
there will always be more Pokemon until the end of time. Yeah. It's almost a sure thing. And maybe at one point I'll get back into it, but I have not spent any meaningful time with the Pokemon game since Pokemon Yellow.
I did play like the last one for 5 to 8 hours.
That's a
legend. Yeah. Normally, I like it's so hand-holdy. Just when it just fall off after like 30 minutes, I'm like, I'm not fucking sitting here pressing A on text.
I will say,
for ZA, 10 years.
ZA was good. I've not played like a game, a Pokemon game, for that long. No, but it's true. Like, I'm not like that either. But I do feel like that game is stop-start so much. People just want to fucking talk to you.
Like, we know how to throw a Pokeball. Yeah, like, let us go.
There should be just, like, put in your date of birth and then it just skips all the tutorials.
Seriously. You know what I mean? Like, no, but that's not even... Like, it should just be, have you, like, played a Pokemon game before or are you new? Like, and then you skip the bullshit.
Yeah, literally. I agree. I that would be
what
perfect.
What age verification, like, you could achieve for Pokemon.
No, but Siri, but real talk, like, how, no, like, I'm you, like 36 you. This year. I've played how many fucking Pokemon games have come out? Like, there's one every year almost. Like, I know how to throw a Pokeball.
The worst part is that they're going backwards as well. Like, it was so bad with Sun and Moon. Like, it was horrible. And then they recognize that and sort of came away from it a bit with Sword and Shield and Scarlet and Violet. And now they're like, nah, I think we'll go back to like 3 hours of tutorials.
It was Sun and Moon that turned me off. I remember, I remember, it was them that I was like, nah, I'm not doing this.
I also am just like so sick of them talking about friendship. Like, fuck off. Like, I'm not interested. It's just like constant like I want a rival who wants to like beat me up. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't want this like rival who's like, oh, haha, I beat you. See you next time. And it's like, you know, I don't know.
Have you played Black and White or Black and White 2, James?
I did play Black and White back in the day. Okay. Not Black and White
2. They have, like, genuinely fantastic stories.
But and that's the last one I enjoyed. Like that is literally the end. That's the one with N, right?
It's been a wee while.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is the last one that I genuinely enjoyed. I finished ZA begrudgingly. Like, I think it got a bit shit towards the end. But, like, yeah, like, Black and White is probably the last one I enjoyed. I don't know. Yeah.
If a Nintendo Switch 2 owner was to jump in and play a Pokemon game that you think I would like enjoy in kind of a modern context, which one would you recommend?
Pokemon
probably
Snap.
Probably Brilliant.
For you. I've probably actually played Pokemon Snap.
Done
a speed run of it.
I think on the Switch, the best like distillation of Pokemon is probably Brilliant Diamond and Shining Pearl, the Gen 4 remakes.
Okay. Okay. James is nodding. This is useful.
So you haven't played Red and Blue? Red and Green.
Wait,
let's go
then. I
played Pokemon Yellow and I played Pokemon Go, and that's really about it.
I mean,
and
Yellow
Pokemon
is
Snap.
These ones. Well, no, then it's not the remake, is it, of them?
Let's Go is Yellow, basically.
Yeah, Let's Go. Or I play the new remakes that are coming out.
They're not yes. Sorry.
Fire Red and Leaf Green are remakes, yeah.
Yeah, no, I thought you meant like remakes, like new remakes. Anyway, it's like, let's move on, I think. Let's go.
I've got a rapid fire question to get us to what the wiki. Although it's a little unclear what he was talking about, Christopher Judge let slip that we could expect to hear more about, quote, what we're working on in response to a fan question at a convention in Canada. Rapid fire off the top of your dome, Shannon, what do you think he was referencing?
Was he even
a
talking
God of
about
War
Sony?
Game? That bridges.
We're not sure.
Greece and Iceland. Norse mythology. Blank for a second there.
What?
There's so much time that we can explore. Let's do it.
So let's do those two eras again.
I think he's appearing in this new-ish kind of IP that Corey Barlog is working on. Take on.
He's got such
a different character.
Iconic voice. Like, it's just such a. One voice.
He can do other things. He's an actor. He's versatile. James?
I don't know. Like, I don't really care. Like, just...
Okay, it's a valid answer.
Like, sorry.
Harry?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe a Sons of Sparta sequel where you play as old Kratos.
That's God of War 1.
I'm surprised no one suggested he might have a cameo in the TV series. I reckon there's a good chance that he... I don't know if that's been confirmed that he's in it.
I couldn't see him play Kratos' dad or something.
Yeah, yeah. It's just straight out of The Last of Us adaptation.
Yeah.
Playbook.
You don't see
is,
him,
okay.
You just hear him say, like, whoa. Like.
That could be fun. I like that. Speaking of things I like, let's play What the Wiki, the podcast game show where the previous week's winner reads part of a Wikipedia page for an unknown game, and we, the contestants, must guess the game. A point is awarded for each correct guess with a round concluding after someone's bagged themselves 2 points. Currently in the lead, we have James on 8 points. Shannon, you're in second place with 6 points. In third, we have myself on 4. Harry, you're in fourth place on 2 points. And Brody is bringing up the rear on 1 point. I was miraculously the winner last week, so I'm in the hosting chair today. Contestants, if you're ready, I will read you game number one. The game follows a young woman who forms a lifelong bond with a wolf companion as the pair explore and cleanse...
Shannon.
Shannon.
Ugh.
Never. Neva.
It is Neva. Well done, Shannon. Off the mark, collecting an important point in the process. Game number two. The game is a roguelike deck-building game. At the start of the playthrough, the player selects one of 4 predetermined characters.
James,
which provides...
I'm just going to guess.
James, go for it.
Is it Slay the Spire 2?
It's not Slay the Spire.
Harry. Shannon.
Harry, I heard you next.
Slay the Spire.
It is Slay the Spire. No! Well done, Harry.
We don't know that 2 has 4 characters yet, James.
Okay.
Game.
Actually, no, we do now.
Wait, isn't it out next month? Surely.
Yeah, we do. Yeah, it's next.
Brody was having a conniption about that to me yesterday. Still, like, that's how much he's thinking about this fantasy critic.
Because
thing.
It's I do know, fantasy critic. Yeah,
I do know it's playing on his mind.
Yeah. All right, game number three. Shannon, Harry, you either of you get this. You are going home the winner today. Game number three. The game is a platform game in which players control a small, dark red, cube-shaped character who must.
Harry.
I heard Harry the.
Super Meat Boy.
It is Super Meat Boy. Well done, Harry.
Wow.
Drawing level with myself in third place there. And yeah, taking on the hosting duties next week. There was a little bit of a theme in that, these games are kind of all indie games, so they're kind of getting a sequel this year was kind of my theme. Or prologue in the case of Neva, which Brody has a review on the site for. So do go and check that out. But with that, let's bring an end to what was this week's episode.
Trivia!
Trivia! I always forget about trivia! Sorry, James.
Let's go. A rapid
I really need
trivia,
to add trivia to please. My notes so I don't just like roll by.
Okay, Ewan. Really easy topics. Resident Evil 7, Resident Evil 4, or Resident Evil Village?
I hate this so much.
This is payback.
Let's go Village. I think... I did just admit that I've forgotten a whole sequence of that game, but it does feel fresher in the memory.
Okay. Let's go with...
There's no way I get this right. Warning you all now.
Nah, you might get this, I reckon.
Okay, all right.
yeah,
now maybe, now makes it harder. He's thinking of the
okay.
fly here.
No, no, no. Chris Redfield operates with which unit? The UBCS, the USS, the DSO, or the Hound Wolves?
Is it the DSO?
Is that your final answer?
Yes.
Is it USS?
Unfortunately, Ewan, DSO is who Leon works for.
Hound
Wolves are Chris Redfield's squad. So
that's the lamest name.
Yeah, well, Chris is lame. That's why he's cool. Anyway.
Okay, not sure how that works. But with that, let's bring an end to what was this week's episode of the Press Start Podcast. Subscribe to us on Listener or the podcast service of your choice. Follow us at press.au and visit the site at pressstart.com.au. We've been joined today by Harry.
Yes, you can follow me on socials at Harry_Kallo, K-A-L-O.
Well done for winning What the Wiki this week. We also had Shannon.
Yeah, you can follow me at Shannon Grigsty.
And taking us through his review of Resident Evil Requiem, do make sure you go and check out his full thoughts over on the website. It was James.
Yes, you can find me on Twitter at James, A-T-J-M-Z, and Blue Sky.
And I've been your host, Ewan. You can follow me on socials at Ewan_Roxburgh. We'll be back again next week, but until then, happy gaming.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.